Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Carver Watson with Let's Talk.
We acknowledge the sovereignty of all First Nations people right across the country, particularly the local traditional owners, the Yuggera, Turrbal, Gubbi Gubbi, Yugambeh and Quandamooka peoples. And we also acknowledge our old people, elders of the first people of the land and elders of more recent arrivals. And good morning to all of our listeners tuned in across the National Indigenous Radio Service. It's great to have you company this morning. And as the year is slowly winding up, I'm joined by editor of New Matilda, Chris Graham. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Watson.
Good morning. Mate, it's probably one of the last times that you and I are going to chat, so we've got a few things to... there's a few things in the headlines that we can talk
about. You mean
about
this year or forever?
What? Well...
Is something happening?
Well, we are going to do a little bit of planning over the,
okay.
The Christmas break.
So, well, it's been nice, everyone. horrible way to find out, but...
But a few things to talk about. But before we do that, it's in the last week we've seen the sad passing of a number of very big names and well-known names synonymous with Aboriginal affairs.
Yes.
The passing of Lester Bostock, who spent many years working particularly within media and goes back to the days of black theatre in Sydney, was involved in Skid Row, as well as many years in film and television in SBS. One of those similar figures and names, like our previous CEO, Tige, and played an integral role in providing the platform and paving the way for a lot of Aboriginal people who've taken up, careers and the art of storytelling in media. So we acknowledge his passing, as well as another well-known figure, particularly in and around Sydney, but right across the country, Sol Blair, who was, again, synonymous with political activism. Was there in the very early days of the 10 Embassy and played an integral role in the community-controlled services in and around Sydney. And, Chris, you worked with Sol.
Yeah, I did. Sol worked for me for a little while and then I worked for Sol for a while, quite a bit longer.
And so we send our condolences to his family and of course, community. And at the beginning of this week, we received news that another... Titan of a name in Dennis Walker had passed away in Canberra. For many of our people, particularly here in Brisbane, we are well aware of Dennis's involvement in going way back to the very earliest foundations of political activism, particularly in and around Brisbane with the formation of the Tribal Council, and his involvement with many of the things that followed and were established following the Tribal Councils in our medical services, our legal services, and the community-controlled services that we all know and that are still here today, are here for our community. So we would, of course, pay our respects and acknowledge his family, the Walker family, and his community, both of North Stradbroke Island, Minjerribah, but also of Brisbane. Before we sort of start to have our discussion here on Let's Talk, we'd like to take a break and play a couple of songs in memory of all of those who've gone before us, particularly those three men that I've mentioned. And we're going to listen to No Fixed Address, We Have Survived, which was in many ways a bit of an anthem for that era.
Of all of which
those men have played an integral part. And we today still are directly linked through our communities and the services and our organisations that we all are part of and working towards a better future for our people. This is No Fixed Address.
Thank you. troubled I search mine. They tell me you're puzzled and hurt by the color line. Your beautiful black skin, soft as velvet shine. What can I tell you, son of mine? Son of mine, I could tell you of heartbreak, hatred blind. I could tell you of crimes that shame mankind. I could tell you of brutal wrong and deeds so malign. Things I could tell you, son of mine, son of mine. But I will tell you instead of deeds brave and fine, when the lives of black and white folk entwine, and of the good that comes when men and brotherhood combine. This I will tell you, son of mine. This I will tell you, son of mine.
Welcome back to Let's Talk. That was Uncle Les Collins singing a song that was based on a poem, Son of Mine, by Dennis Walker's late mother, Ujuru Noonuccal, also known as Kath Walker. And we are joined in the studio this morning by Chris Graham. G'day, mate.
Howdy, howdy.
We'll do our intros again because we had some sorry business there to attend to start off with. But for people who aren't familiar with you, who are you? What's your go, Chris Graham?
I'm the tall, dark, handsome stranger
there. Yeah, you're not.
That your mother warned you about. No, that's true. I'm not that tall. I'm not that dark. I'm the editor of New Matilda magazine and the acting general manager of the National Indigenous Radio Service, born and bred in Sydney, age 45, feel every bit of it, and a bit of Scottish, Irish and Māori heritage.
Very good. Enjoy long walks on the beach?
I do. I like raging and water sports. And I'm single, if anything. I literally am.
You're married to your job, mate.
I am, yeah, unfortunately. Yeah.
But
it's a violent marriage.
You follow a lot of, I guess, what people would deem left-leaning topics and subjects, of which there seems to be a fair bit in the news headlines, particularly as of late. Now, I've seen that there were protesters punching on in the streets down in Sydney?
Melbourne. More in Melbourne. There was a little bit of unrest in Sydney, but not like there was in Melbourne.
What's the bee in the bonnet? What's going on?
Well, look, I actually had planned to be at that particular protest. I've been invited by the Campaign Against Racism and Fascism, which is a sort of loose grouping of the left in Melbourne. They kind of formed to deal with precisely the sort of stuff that Milo Yiannopoulos promotes, but basically they're there to fight fascists and racists. They'd invited me to come down and do a kind of doco, a kind of insider's look, so I was going to follow them around. I just couldn't get there. We've just got too much going on. But I was in touch with and know quite a few of the people involved and had a chat to them afterwards. The video, this footage you saw, I think Channel 7 ran the hardest with it, but you would have seen it across the commercial networks and the ABC. Was of what appeared to be leftist protesters punching on with police and fascists and Nazis.
Did they? Sorry,
I didn't have my mic on.
Oops,
I had a question. Did they have any sort of other groups that were supporting the speaker? We'll get to the speaker and who it was before, but was it mainly just police forces?
Yeah, it was mainly just there was a lot of police. And if you've seen the photos online, all the footage, you know, there's this new style of riot police who dress up in these ridiculous costumes. They look like something out of Blade Runner, or they're just ridiculous. But what actually happened, Yiannopoulos was supposed to speak in the city, and the venue was cancelled at the fairly the last minute. So they moved it out to a suburb called Flemington, and they announced that an hour before the event that it had moved to Flemington. So the groups who were organising to protest expected, you know, last-minute changes, so they all made their way to Flemington. What nobody realised is that the venue in Flemington that was hosting Yiannopoulos was literally across the road from a massive housing commission area where a lot of Africans in particular and Muslims live. So when the left-wing protesters turned up, there's about 500, a few hundred of them, when they turned up to protest Yiannopoulos' speech, it didn't go unnoticed from the Housing Commission flats, and hundreds of African men and women and Muslims came out to join the protest. Understandably, Milo Yiannopoulos, the thing he said about Muslims in particular, doesn't bear repeating. I mean, he's a pig of a man, and but he particularly targets Muslims, and he particularly targets people of colour. So there was this swelling of the protest, and things went reasonably
pear-shaped.
Well, they did eventually, but not during the actual protest. CAF, who organised the protest, always knew. They decided to leave it up to the marshals of the protest at what time they would call the protest off, because there were a series of talks. Yiannopoulos did, I think, two or three talks in Melbourne. So the protest went for a very long time, and about 9 o'clock, CAF marched back to the police station. They moved as a group because it's safer that way, because the place was swarming with not as many, but neo-Nazis and really extreme far-right nutbags. So the protesters, the official CAF protest, moved off. But the people who joined the protest didn't, which was the African, predominantly young men. And
Who lived there, you said?
Who lived there. They lived across the road.
Yeah.
They didn't move off with the CAF protest. They stayed around, and that's when things got out of control. I wasn't there, so I don't know who started it. If history is the best predictor of future behaviour, if past behaviour is the best predictor of future behaviour, I would say the police or the neo-Nazis started it. In any event, it got very ugly. And rocks were thrown. I've seen footage. We've published some on New Matilda of a well-known neo-Nazi attacking a group of left-wing, attacking a group of protesters. It basically just got, I wouldn't say out of hand, but the police, if you've seen the footage, you know, they were dressed for a punch on, and that's exactly what they did. They were...
Well, they would have been expecting
trouble.
Yeah, some sort of demonstration. So for people who are not familiar, and I'm a relatively novice in my understanding of
Yiannopoulos.
Yiannopoulos. Who is Milo Yiannopoulos, Chris Graham?
Well, where do I start, and how do I get this on radio without A, offending, and B, breaching the law? He's a British turned American
journo,
sort of. Yeah, he's a journalist slash activist slash. He calls himself a comedian. He refers to himself in many different ways. He says, well, from his perspective, what he describes himself as is a comedian who says really outrageous, provocative things in the style of British comedy to provoke broader discussion about issues. Which actually, he's really just trying to give himself a license to spread some of the most appalling hatred you'll hear aired publicly. And then he retreats to, well, it's just a tool to spark debate. And he says that he's really about protecting free speech. Free speech has always come with responsibilities, and he breaches his all the time. But that's essentially who he is. He became famous because he was on Twitter, and he would troll famous people on Twitter and then set his hundreds of thousands, sometimes millions of followers onto a particular people. And then he got booted off Twitter, and that's where he really gained prominence, for trolling, I can't remember her name, but she was the black woman in the Ghostbusters movie, in the remake of the Ghostbusters movie. she just got inundated with, you know, abuse and what have you as a result of Yiannopoulos's trolling of her. And he describes himself as a troll, so he gets on social media and just trolls people. There isn't really, I mean, there's lower human life forms than trolls, but they're pretty down there. And this guy self-identifies as a right-wing troll. He's essentially a neo-Nazi sympathiser. So he wrote a series of articles for a website called Breitbart News, where he worked as the tech editor, where he was talking about what they call the alt-right, which is just a gentle way of describing neo-Nazis and white supremacists. They try to recast themselves as a legitimate political movement, and Yiannopoulos has been at the forefront of promoting the alt-right and talking about the alt-right. He denies that, of course, and every time he is interviewed, and he's been interviewed in Australia now countless times as part of this tour, he will say things like, I am a gay Jew who is married to a black man. I can't possibly be a neo-Nazi. I can't, you know, they hate me, which is rubbish. They don't hate him. They promote his stuff all the alt-right promotes his stuff all the time, and he's a hero to the alt-right. There's a beautiful irony in the way Yiannopoulos conducts himself, because he says, and he's said in Australia since he's been here, that identity politics is toxic. And he's referring to people on the left who talk about their experiences in life and use that to prosecute a political argument. Identity politics, Aboriginal people often are part of the identity politics. I wouldn't call it a movement, but, you know, they will rely on their life experience to prosecute a political point. So they might say, you know, I am a black man in Australia, and the experiences of black men in Australia is X, Y, and Z. They're right.
You can make that argument about anyone, though. Like, well, you can technically say that, you know, George Brandis is playing identity politics by promoting the ideal of freedom of speech. I mean, it's part of the Western...
It is, and it's a broad area, identity politics. Yeah. The irony of it is that Yiannopoulos says that identity politics is toxic, but every single interview he conducts, and I mean every single interview, he weaves in the story that he can't possibly be a neo-Nazi because he's a gay Jew who's married to a black man. So Yiannopoulos plays identity politics with the best of them. He does it all the time, every day, but attacks the left for identity politics, you know, attacks people of colour for talking about their colour and their experiences. So look, he's been caught out. BuzzFeed did a big investigation into him. A lot of his emails were leaked to BuzzFeed, which showed that he was actively trying to promote white supremacists on his website and in the speeches that he does. He's an unashamed hater of other people's freedoms. He just rails against anything that's not Western, what he considers to be Western values. So
is he still writing? I'd heard he's been moved on from a position or two.
Well, he got
and people have started
from
to distance themselves from
look,
him. So he's even sort of gone outside of the ambit of
absolutely. He's been caught out a few times. Yeah. When you play the sort of toxic politics that Yiannopoulos plays, inevitably you're going to get caught out. He gave a speech at an event in the US where a gentleman called Richard Neville, who's an avowed Nazi, was standing behind him giving Hitler salutes while he spoke. Yiannopoulos claims he's short-sighted and didn't see it. What really made him come unstuck in the US, and the guy is toxic in the US, he doesn't get much play in the US anymore, because earlier this year in a public forum he was essentially promoting pedophilia. He was saying that, you know, it wasn't such a bad thing that older men have
relationships with
young boys. That finished him in the US. In Australia, however, you know, we're a little bit more apathetic. We're a little bit less aware of what this guy represents. So Penthouse magazine, of all publications, decided to bring him out on a tour, and that's why he is currently wandering around the country spreading all sorts of extraordinary messages. I mean, he's in Perth. He turned up to tell people that Aboriginal art is crap. I mean, why you would... You know, A, it's not. B, what? He made a joke about...
He sounds a bit immature.
Well, he is. And look, he's just a guy who is utterly, utterly, frantically desperate for attention. His only value, really, to society is to promote corduroy. That's about it.
So
he's a flamboyant, toxic, gay man who hates homosexuality. In Perth, he said, you know, he described refugees, their value to society was a shark bait. He's told Australians, don't let Muslims in because they'll rape all your women. That's the stuff he says. I mean, it is off the charts, crazy stuff. But he's been boosted on every major commercial network and newspaper and media outlet in the country. They put him forward like he has something interesting and relevant to say. The guy is just desperate unhinged. For attention. Yeah. He's unhinged and he's desperate for attention.
What's his current involvement here in Australia? What's he doing here?
Well, it's an excellent question. Penthouse magazine, which has had all sorts of financial troubles and is known for one thing, porn, brought him out to do a tour. So he's doing a tour called the Troll Academy, where he just goes.
Seems like a reputable publication.
Yeah, absolutely. Who wouldn't want to be associated with Penthouse? So he's just touring the country. He's done a series of talks. I think he's on the Gold Coast tonight, or I don't know where he is. I haven't followed it. But he essentially just talks to a room full of
people who
crazy people.
Agree with the.
Yeah, look, there's been some people sentiments. Who want to go along to hear what he has to say. I thought about it for a while. I thought it'd be interesting to see what this guy has to say because I look at it as a journalist and think, well, he is getting an enormous amount of publicity, not just in Australia, but prior to his boosting of pedophilia, he's getting an enormous amount of publicity in the US. You do need to know what these people are arguing. Some of the points he makes, he particularly hates feminists, but some of the points he makes about the left are broadly accurate, that the left can be intolerant of other views. That's very true about the left. It's also very true about the right. Some of the points he makes are not unreasonable. But everybody at some point in their lives makes not unreasonable points. The real stuff that he promotes is what is so toxic about the guy. He is just there to spew hatred, and he does it very well, and he gets a lot of reaction.
Am I correct in understanding he went to Parliament House?
He did. He was invited by David Lionhelm, the Libertarian Liberal Democrats senator, to speak, and he spoke to, by all accounts, about 8 people and then some journalists in the press gallery. What was really interesting about that event, Yiannopoulos has chosen his media, the media he's done in Australia, very carefully. So he goes on pointless shows like Studio 10, where he's not going to be grilled by anyone with any substance or knowledge of politics or knowledge of what he's about. So he picks really easy targets. He did Alan Jones's radio show in Sydney. He picks, they call them friendly interviews. When he got to Parliament House, he was facing off against the Canberra Press Gallery. Now, whatever you think of the Canberra Press Gallery, I'm a member of it, but I don't think much of it. They are a different style of journalist. They don't just sit and take what you say at face value. They do their research and they'll put the blowtorch to your feet. Yiannopoulos couldn't handle it. I mean, he just couldn't deal with the level of questioning he was getting, and he was dismissive and ridiculous, and it was an absolute fizzer, the Parliament event, because the guy, when put under serious scrutiny, just falls apart. So he doesn't subject himself to that, and I'm surprised he did on this occasion. Yeah. You know, if you put him in front of a serious journalist who had done their research and was going to seriously challenge and question, he's a disaster area. All he can do is kind of make witticisms and sort of jokes and insult people and what have you. He's an irrelevancy, really. But one of the things that's really frustrated me watching, not so much the coverage in Australia, because I expect Australian media to boost a guy like this because it's good for ratings. You know, it's the part of the outrage economy now where if you want to get traffic to your website or you want to get listeners or readers or viewers, the best way to do that is to put up someone who is utterly ridiculous and says toxic, horrible things, because that generates a great big fight. And then everybody's a winner, except society, of course, and the people who get bashed in the fight, which is usually people of colour or minorities.
Got a couple of them in Parliament.
Yeah, the behaviour of the Australian media around Yiannopoulos beautifully reflects the behaviour of our toxic Australian Parliament. Mm. It reflects it beautifully. But the thing that's frustrated me is that people, are, you know, leftists and people in the centre on social media are saying, well, don't give him any publicity. they've said that to New Matilda quite a few times when we've done a series of stories rebutting what he says. Here's the bad news, people. Milo Yiannopoulos' social media accounts have massive followings. The genie, the horse has already bolted on this guy. The genie is out of the bottle and he is getting widespread coverage in Australia to promote his hatred and toxic views. Some people's view is, well, we should just ignore that. Well, you know, how do you think the Northern Territory intervention happened? It was because people ignored it. It was because silence is consent these days. But we jail men, women and children in concentration camps overseas who sought asylum because people stay silent. So the criticisms of media, but particularly the criticisms of activist organisations like CAF, which have stood up to shout down this guy, I find those criticisms really infuriating because... and they predominantly come from white men and women who have no skin in this game. They look at someone like Milo and just go, oh, just ignore him. Well, okay, Milo's not talking about you. Milo's actually boosting your rights. Milo's talking about people of colour. He's talking about Muslims. He's talking about Aboriginal people. And he is attacking those people. And your response to that is to sit there and say, just ignore him. He's ridiculous. Well, he is ridiculous, but he's not being ignored by the substantial majority of the mainstream media, and his toxic, poisonous views are being promoted to Australians everywhere. And if your response to that is to simply go silent, well, sorry, you're part of the problem. And when people come after you, don't expect people of colour or Muslims or Aboriginal people to stand beside you, because you did nothing while these people were being eviscerated by a guy from overseas who is irrelevant overseas and is being portrayed as having some sort of interesting, relevant perspective in Australia.
I was speaking to somebody else about him only the last day or two, and they were saying it's like he's marketed himself as this. He's made a business model out of it.
He's made a lot of money.
Out of being sort of the outrage, you know.
Absolutely.
And playing into this sort of growing sentiment. And we've seen it across the world. I mean, Europe's got their whole thing with, you know, mass immigration and da-da-da-da-da. And they've got a sort of alt-right movement. US has had for quite a while with the Tea Party and all that sort of stuff. And then, you know, we've had seen it here with the rise of, you know, parties like One Nation and others. And we've always sort of had that sort of sentiment somewhere in the political spectrum here in this country. But more and more as globalization increases... this sort of, I don't want to call it nationalism, but...
Well, it is a kind of nationalism and jingoism. It's more about just promoting, making money out of outrage. And, look, it's worth noting that the people who believe what Milo Yiannopoulos says and who embrace it are a very small minority of people. You know, he would have spoken to... less than 20,000 people around the country. Last time I checked, there were 24 million Australians who didn't go to a Milo Yiannopoulos gig. But he does get boosted on mainstream media. And mainstream media's interest in a guy like Milo is simply to generate anger and fury because that's how they make money. That's precisely how Milo Yiannopoulos makes money as well. What is so offensive about the whole process is that it's not just the media, but... apathetic Australians stand back and they say, oh, well, look, the left, look at how the left are behaving, you know, these activists, blah, blah, blah. There is no moral equivalency between a leftist standing up to shout down fascism and racism. There is no moral equivalency with someone like Milo Yiannopoulos, who is promoting white supremacy. He's calling for, he's hoping refugees die at sea. He's publicly stating that. He attacks... the same-sex attracted community. He hates feminists. He argues against basic fundamental human rights. So there is no moral equivalency. And people who attack protesters and Muslims and people of colour who stand up against this guy really need to shut the hell up and have a think about who they're attacking, because it's like the Charlottesville. It was that great awakening they had in the US when left-wing protesters turned out to protest Nazis in the street. And a Nazi got in a car and drove into the crowd and killed a person. And Donald Trump came out and said, there are good people on both sides. No, there are not. There are no good Nazis. The term that good and Nazi doesn't go together. There's no such thing as a good Nazi. A Nazi is a Nazi. And you might not like the conduct of some people on the left who have loud, angry protests against people like Yiannopoulos, but there is no moral equivalency between the two at all, and anyone who suggests there is a massive part of the problem.
You spoke at a Senate committee.
Oh, I did, yeah.
On public interest journalism.
Yeah.
But this is the thing that comes up when people sort of, evoke these ideas and say things and talk about, whether it be in disparaging ways about refugees or migrant groups, just minorities generally.
Yeah.
It's often done with this, well, we have the right to offend or insult and, the protection of freedom of speech and their right to have those views. What is, do you think, we've gone pretty... leaned into your views about what the role should be of the media, but
should be
in this sort of time of when media finds itself at sort of a fair crossroads of losing the battle against social media and the like. Mm. What is needed in this media landscape to actually start to to capture some sort of like coherent public debate around these sorts of issues?
Well, what's needed is a rethink of the business model for media. So the business model now for media is upset as many people as you possibly can, create a false debate, create false balance, pretend that you're giving Joe Bloggs their say and then you get someone else who has a different view, give them their say. That's not really what goes on. They put up someone like Milo Yiannopoulos to have his say, and he is of the extreme right. They don't put someone of the extreme left. They don't even often put someone in the centre. They put someone with right-wing views who, thinks that Milo Yiannopoulos went too far. And I should add, Andrew Bolt hosted the first talk in Perth, came out and said he wouldn't do it again. So... that's how extreme this guy is. If Andrew Bolt is walking away from you, you've got some problems. And he's got some problems, I tell you what. But the way for media to move forward, I don't know a solution for media. I know that at New Matilda we're an independent outlet. We don't we fundamentally seek to do no harm. I know that that's a difficult area to operate in, but we try to promote debates which advance society. We don't just try to get down in the mud and fling mud at people and create outrage and then stand back and look at what we've done and count the cash. The reason why media is in so much trouble and that media organisations around the world are collapsing is because people don't trust the media. They had nowhere else to spend their advertising dollars years ago when media controlled media. But now that organisations like Facebook and Google are chewing up billions of dollars in advertising revenue from traditional media outlets, they're falling apart. And their response to the rejection of their business model has been to do more of what they used to do, which got them there in the first place. That is, just create mayhem and outrage, and they do it with the all care no responsibility model. That it is highly irresponsible of a media outlet to put someone like Milo Yiannopoulos forward and say, "What do you think about X, Y, and Z?" It is incredibly irresponsible. Obviously, of course, the man's entitled to his free speech. That doesn't mean he should get a megaphone, but that's what the media do.
Now you sit on the press council. What is the problem?
I'll be there tomorrow.
What is the problem with there are guidelines out there and ethics expected of journalists and media outlets.
There are, and journalists daily fail to meet them. And the problem is, and look, I am on the press council. I'm a believer in the press council, and I admire the work the press council does. But a free press is a tricky thing. Like free speech is a tricky thing. You can't have a free press if it's governed by strict rules controlled by government.
Your separation of powers.
You do. The media is known as the fourth estate, and the reason we're known as the fourth estate is because we're the kind of last... we're supposed to be the last resort when the other pillars of government, whether the legislative arm, parliament, and I can't think of the third estate, but the fourth estate... the fourth estate is the media, where there is a kind of backstop when those other pillars of government and democracy fail. But the fourth estate hasn't operated as a fourth estate for years. I mean, it is...
an example of that is what you're talking about before, like in the press gallery. Like people, they are there to grill people in positions of power and question whether or not the power is being... and publicly scrutinise whether or not the power is being used properly.
They are. They're fundamentally, the role of journalists is to hold truth to power. And increasingly, that's not what journalists do. What journalists do is they try to become part of the political game. They become sycophants to power and they defend the status quo. Michael Brull, one of our writers, wrote a very good piece in New Matilda about why media is attracted to someone like Yiannopoulos, because it maintains the status quo. Media companies, even though many of them are failing, are still owned by rich white people, and they're still predominantly staffed by relatively well-off white people. That's the status quo that people want to maintain, and they maintain that by doing what they've always done, which is boosting, you know, people like Milo Yiannopoulos. They don't want a genuine, free, fair and balanced and fearless media. That's not how you advance in a society like Australia. New Matilda's the living, breathing proof of that. We're independent and we're poor. The Daily Mail, for example, which is one of the worst publications in history, has written dozens of stories on Milo Yiannopoulos.
You're on record as not being a fan.
No, I'm definitely. And look, I'm heading to the Press Council tomorrow. They've recently been admitted to the Press Council, and I am running an open, naked campaign trying to get them booted off the Press Council, because I think they're a disgrace. I don't think they do journalism. I think they do churnalism, which is to steal other people's work, and they just promote hatred. They're the perfect fit for a Yiannopoulos, because they just want to stir up anger and frustration, and they want to give voice to people in the community who stir up that anger and frustration. That's their job.
We've spoken about this at length, and we always sort of find our way back to it, though. And is this the sort of social media era of journalism, where it's really just generated on clicks?
Like,
people
it is.
Are
That's
just
all it
trying
is.
To drive traffic.
They just want
and so,
traffic.
And when so your whole sort of MO is just about attention and clicks and web traffic,
yeah.
People are going to read about either things that they agree with or things that... So the saying, you know,
yeah.
conflict, can you know,
yeah.
Violence and conflict.
Media's always been about clicks, in the sense that it was always about sensationalising stories to get attention. That's always been the business model. But it wasn't as extreme. With the rise of social media, it's become extreme. In the older days, they had a monopoly on advertising. They were called the rivers of gold, was the classified advertising. They had a monopoly on that advertising.
And even a creek no more.
Yeah, no, it's not. It looks like the Todd River in Alice Springs. They had that monopoly, and there was a belief in journalism, and so with that monopoly, they were able to produce some real journalism. Now there's not that much space for real journalism, because it's a frantic fight for the clicks and a shrinking advertising bucket of money. So they're all panicked. They're not just doing what they used to do, the bad stuff they used to do. They've intensified the bad stuff they used to do. And it's
result to the fore somebody like Milo.
That's right, and it is exacerbated by platforms like Facebook, which they've done an awful lot of work around this Facebook, an awful lot of work in writing algorithms that ensure that you get the stories delivered to your timeline that already reflect your point of view. They talk about echo chambers, and that's essentially what Facebook is. My Facebook feed is just populated with left-wing outrage and
propaganda.
Milo would call it propaganda. But someone who embraces someone like Milo Yiannopoulos will be inundated with Breitbart news and fake news. Ironically, Donald Trump has popularised the term fake news, and that's why I was recently giving evidence to a Senate inquiry. It was about this issue of fake news.
Come on, Facebook. Stop causing fights.
Well, look, I mean, the irony is fake news is not really a thing. Fake news has always been around. The Daily Telegraph has run fake news for decades. So has Fairfax, so has the ABC. They all do it, and they still do it today. What Donald Trump was trying to say was any story that reflected badly on him was fake news. Well, not necessarily. But it's not the problem that people think it is. The problem is the business models of media have collapsed, and so they always used to shred the rule book, but they've given up really any pretense of doing any decent, honourable journalism. I mean, there are exceptions to the rule occasionally. Some of the bigger publications occasionally do good work. The ABC consistently does good work. It also does some of the worst work. But you're seeing the rise of publications like Daily Mail.
Well, there you go. You heard it here first. Read widely.
Yeah, we're all going to hell in a handbasket.
You're listening to Let's Talk, and we're speaking to Chris Graham, editor of New Matilda. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back shortly. Make sure you stay with us.
Dad, Are you quitting eating healthy already?
Oh, look, you know, it's just a snack before the footy starts.
Yeah, but don't be forgetting that gym session tomorrow. We're supposed to be making these healthy changes together, remember?
Parents serve as healthy role models for their children through direct interactions and by examples they set with their attitude and behaviour towards eating healthy and physical activity. It's well known that physical activity is good for the body and mind. Plus, when combined with a healthy diet, we can look and feel great and even reduce our risk of chronic diseases or help better manage them. Families can make some healthy changes together when it comes to being active and eating healthy tucker. And it will be more likely you can motivate each other and you can even make it fun with competitions and rewards. If you're looking for ideas or ways to improve your health, visit healthier.queensland.gov.au.
A message from the Staying Strong Project, funded by the Australian Government Department of Health.
Land of the dreamtime, rolling away, stretched out on the clear blue skies, every which way. Oh, land of sunshine, south of the line, found and lost and found again. Somewhere in time, Autumn, the storms come and go. The wheels of the gods, they move slow. You can't rush a rose to unfold. The story is yet to be told. O land of silence, old as the sky, teaching me to understand peace by and by. Autumn, the storms come and go. The wheels of the gods, they move slow. You can't rush your rose to unfold. The story is yet to be told. See a clearer view of what you've known. For in my youth, my age has come and time has flown. Time has flown. Capricorn, dance in my heart, rolling through the Kimberley to Autumn at last. Autumn, the storms come and go. The wheels of the gods, they move slow. You can't rush your rose to unfold. The story is yet to be told. Autumn land, Autumn land, Autumn land, Autumn land.
This is Carver Watson with Let's Talk.
Welcome back to Let's Talk. We're speaking with Chris Graham from New Matilda. And as we've been saying, mate, it's been a big year, but it's the headlines aren't slowing up.
No, they're not.
Today, you know, one of our favourite, the constants, the standing agenda item in all media across the world, Donald Trump.
Yay. Yeah. I love Donald Trump. He's God's gift to journalism. He's like Tony Abbott, but on steroids.
It's always something to talk about. Does it get plenty of clicks?
Look, not for us. Milo Yiannopoulos got a lot of reads. Anytime we challenge Yiannopoulos, we get a lot of reads. But Trump, we used to. But people are...
Yeah.
You can't shock people with Donald Trump stuff anymore.
No.
You know, what's the latest outrage? I think people are tired of it.
Yeah.
I mean, they still read about it. And it's still important. We've got to report
You've got a Trump theory that he inoculates himself to like scrutiny.
Yeah.
He's so out there all of the time that when he does do out there stuff, it's just like,
nah. Yeah, he did worse than that last week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a brilliant strategy. I don't think he does it deliberately.
I think that's just him.
No, he's a gibbering idiot, and he's a gibbering idiot now in the most powerful position in the world, and he just continues to be a gibbering idiot, and we just get used to him.
Now, the latest headline of
gibbering
is...
Idiots.
Hi.
Yeah.
So Donald Trump has acknowledged Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not all too familiar with, the Middle East. What is the significance of this decision by Trump?
Well, the capital of Israel is actually Tel Aviv. And Tel Aviv, is uncontested in the sense that it's part of Israel, part of the original Israel mandated through the United Nations. Jerusalem is not. Jerusalem was largely Palestinian land. It was invaded by Israel several times, and since the 67 war has been split, part Palestinian, part Israeli, but occupied Palestine. So East Jerusalem is Palestinian, but it's occupied and controlled by the Israelis, and it has been illegally occupied and controlled since 67. All of the countries around the world that have embassies in Israel have their embassies in Tel Aviv, including the US embassy. Australia's embassy is in Tel Aviv. And that is because, under international law, Israel's occupation of Jerusalem is illegal. So by Donald Trump now signalling that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, and presumably the US will now base their embassy in Jerusalem, he's essentially saying that the international law is wrong, that the occupation of Palestine by Israel is not an occupation at all, that it's legal. And it's not. It is clearly an illegal occupation. It's been shown to be that countless times. Only the dumbest of dumb argue against it. Props to Julie Bishop. She argued against it a year or two ago, said illegal under whose law? Well,
I'm going to get that. Props to Julie Bishop from Chris Graham.
Yeah, well, props to Julie Bishop. Well, I was being sarcastic because she inferred that the occupation of Palestine was not illegal. It is illegal. Black and white, period, it's illegal.
Is this a recent thing, or has there been a sort of historic push to have Jerusalem recognised as the capital of Israel, or is this just out of left field?
No, there's been a push for decades and decades. There was Israel was founded as a state in the 30s, and there's been some major events in the life of Israel where they have sought to drive as many Palestinians out of Palestinian land as they can, and progressively encroached and taken over and occupied
settlements. They call them
the settlements,
that go beyond the.
Yeah, I was there last year, and they are building massive cities on Palestinian land, which is occupied Palestinian land, and spreading the settlements of Israel further and further and further, and taking more and more Palestinian land. It is a really simple black and white issue. What they're doing is fundamentally illegal under international law. Without question, it's illegal. But they're doing it anyway. Australia is supporting them to do it. The United States is supporting them to do it. Britain has supported them.
It sounds like the US has now just really leaned into it.
Yeah, they have leaned into it. They've opened it up, and they've essentially said, yep, Jerusalem's the capital, which Israel has wanted to hear for a very long time, because the way they control occupied Palestine is apartheid. There's no other word to describe it. It is in some ways worse than the laws of South Africa apartheid. It is unashamedly discriminatory. The laws of Israel are an international disgrace.
But there are people in Israel who are actually Israelis fighting that are talking about this as well.
Yeah, look, there are. They're in the very much in the minority. I think it's about 10 to 20% of Israelis believe that Israel is doing the wrong thing. There's a guy in Australia at the moment, Gideon Levy, who is a very famous, very courageous Israeli journalist who rails against the injustices against the Palestinian people. He's been touring the country doing a series of talks. He didn't get anything like the... We got none of the publicity that Milo Yiannopoulos, a right-wing white supremacist, got. But there, you know, there is... It's really uncontested that Israel's conduct is illegal, and that their suppression of Palestinian people is brutal. It's the most brutal suppression on earth.
What's the fellow's name?
Gideon Levy.
Gideon Levy.
Yeah, he's an extraordinary man, an incredibly courageous man. I mean, he endures death threats every day in Israel. Hmm. But the suppression of the Palestinian people, every few years they bomb the absolute daylights out of Gaza, they kill thousands of people. It's, you know, it's a tragedy. We can talk about it another day, though. I mean,
we can, and I don't think that issue's going anywhere. Chris Graham, thanks for joining us this morning.
Pleasure as always.
And, mate, we'll catch up with you next year. You've been listening to Let's Talk. We'll be back tomorrow. Make sure you join us.